you can't get more simple than a square and a cube.
That's Saul LeWitt, the late great conceptual artist. And I'm Jasan Lopez-Cassell. You're listening to Variations on a Theme. This podcast series explores key themes in LeWitt's body of work to consider how other creative folks have responded to and been inspired by his influence. Simplicity is a funny concept in LeWitt's work. Much of his art is guided by a basic set of instructions or even just a few rules. Concise and straightforward on the surface, these parameters combine simple forms like lines, squares, or cubes to produce these very complex wall drawings or sculptures. With Saul LeWitt, it's the simple concepts that can really yield the most incredibly elaborate and elegant forms. In this episode, we'll head from the gallery to the runway to hear from a pair of fashion designers who found inspiration in a big idea, one that LeWitt embedded within some brilliantly simple cubes. Intrigued? I hope so. Let's meet our guests.
I'm Lazaro Hernandez. I'm co-designer of Proenza Schooler.
I'm Jack McCullough, and I'm co-designer of Proenza Schooler as well.
If you follow fashion, you may already know Lazaro and Jack's story. The pair met as freshmen at Parsons School of Design and became basically inseparable. By senior year, they'd become so tight creatively that they opted to collaborate on their thesis project, a first for Parsons. Barneys New York swooped in and bought the full collection in 2002, kickstarting their label, Proenza Schooler. Those are their mother's maiden names, by the way. Parsons is a big part of Jack and Lazaro's story in fashion, but it's also what led them to the work of Saul LeWitt. Here's Lazaro.
We came from this sort of history of fashion from the world of Helmut Lang and Jill Sander and early Prada, those kind of quintessential 90s designers. It was a time of minimalism in fashion and aesthetics. And that sort of look and feel and approach was something that really resonated with us.
Parsons is known for pushing an interdisciplinary approach. So it's not surprising that Jack and Lazaro dabbled in a little art history as fashion students. And when they came across the art movements of the 60s and 70s, specifically minimalism and conceptualism, the philosophies behind them really struck a chord.
When the art universe and the fashion universe kind of collided, and for us at least, aesthetically in that way, I don't know, to us it was really exciting and led us down a whole path of people like Donald Judd and Steinbeck and just kind of that whole Dia Beacon universe. And Saul LeWitt was one of the characters in that story.
To hear Lazaro and Jack tell it, Saul LeWitt and many of his peers provided ample inspiration. But in terms of Proenza Schooler, it would take a few years for that influence to really show up in their designs.
You know, we've always known about the wall drawings and whatnot, and we never really saw the link or saw how that could sort of be a reference point for the work that we do.
Narrowing down their set of influences and inspirations, however, would be uniquely important to these two. Proenza Schooler is a luxury fashion brand, yes. But as Jack explains,
it's, you know, a company that we started right out of school. There's no history. It's really just the two of us. And we're forced to kind of just apply our experiences to what we do. It's not like this heritage brand with this history and this past.
That means he and Lazaro don't have centuries or even decades of collections to reference, like some other brands. That means a lot of creative freedom, of course. But as Lazaro puts it, also a lot of pressure.
We have to, you know, be inspired every 6 months and have to say something every 6 months. So we have to seek out references, seek out inspiration, seek out something that sparks some kind of idea for a new approach or for a new set of clothes, a new collection, really.
So their approach has been to make their clothes a kind of autobiography. In the early days of Proenza Schooler, when the guys were first starting to make some more money, they traveled a lot.
I think that showed up a lot in our collections.
Also, like plenty of ridiculously talented young creatives, they wanted to flex a little bit.
It was very much adding and building and embroideries and fabrications.
We thought it was a kind of radical to add. And how much can you add and how cool to add?
By the mid-2010s, Princess Gulu were sidestepping New York Fashion Week to show their ready-to-wear collections in Paris during the week when other big houses show couture. There was embroidery, there were plenty of prints, there was a lot. Their aesthetic made a lot more sense in the context of Paris and elaborate couture shows. But Jack and Lazarus say this was the point where the whole more is more thing started to feel a bit too extra.
After our final show in Paris, I feel like we just pushed that as far as it could possibly go, that it was just kind of now time to kind of take things in a completely different direction.
Having decided to show in the US again, the pair started thinking about a more minimalist aesthetic. Lazaro and Jack's art and fashion universes were colliding again, which would lead them right back to Solowette. A fashion collection begins a ways out from the actual show. So in the winter of 2017 to 2018, Jack and Lazaro did what they usually do when it's time to get started on a new set of ideas. Here's Jack.
We've got a house that's up in the Berkshires in Western Massachusetts, a little farm in the middle of nowhere. And it's kind of this place we got to kind of escape the madness of New York and kind of go and just kind of get into our heads and think and be creative.
Jack and Lazaro built a studio there, and it's where they design all of their collections.
We just sketch for 2 weeks straight, Lazaro at one end of the table, me at the other.
So on that particular visit, they decided to finally visit the world-class arts institution that happened to be just down the road.
We're like, let's go to the Mass MoCA. I can't believe we've never been up there.
Lazaro and Jack remember getting lost around the museum's expansive campus, which was once a sprawling factory dating back to the 19th century. It wasn't until the very end of their visit that they stumbled into Mass MoCA's LeWitt wall drawing retrospective.
We're like, oh, this is the thing that we've been looking for.
The long-term installation occupies three stories of a dedicated building, with LeWitt's work covering nearly an acre's worth of gallery walls. As someone who once interned at Mass MoCA many years ago and spent all summer giving tours of that building, I can tell you that there's really nothing else like it. Surrounded by all of those drawings, most spanning entire walls, you almost feel like you're walking the inside of Solowit's brain. But Lazarus says the thing that caught their eyes most of all wasn't on the walls.
The part that we walked away from that experience being most inspired by is those sort of, those incomplete cube structures.
Lazarus is referencing Solowit's incomplete cubes, actually a sculpture series, which debuted at the John Weber Gallery in New York City in 1974. To understand the concept, start by picturing the structure of a cube. Once you've got that mental image, now count the number of lines that give the cube its shape. You should have 12. So what happens when you start taking some of those lines away? How many can you take away and still say, yep, that's a cube? Following a handful of simple rules, no fewer than 3 lines and no floating lines detached from the others, LeWitt identified 122 possibilities for totally unique figures made up of as few as 3 lines that would still read as, well, cubes. Seen together, laid out on a grid in the middle of a gallery, the series of small sculptures can almost make your head spin. It's now part of the collection at SF MoMA, but Jack and Lazaro encountered just a few of the figures at Mass MoCA, enough to get their own gears spinning. Here's Jack.
We were just kind of struck by this idea of stripping something away as much as possible, but leaving enough information still for the viewer to kind of fill in the blanks on their own.
Back at their farmhouse, the guys start reading everything they can find about Solowit, and in particular, his incomplete open cubes. Then, as Jack says,
we started stripping things away.
And that meant giving themselves some room to play.
And we started with some old vintage sweaters and just started hacking bits and pieces away, you know, leaving like the crew neck of a sweater, or perhaps the sleeves, but taking away the entire body. We did it with motorcycle jackets. We did it with lapels, with trench coats, with knitwear. We just started like kind of riffing off this whole idea, and it led us to some interesting places.
Lazaro elaborates.
I know with Solowit, there was that whole idea of he needed at least 3 elements to kind of to have that thing identify as a cube. For us, because we're working so many different types of forms, that point was different depending on what we were working on. You know, we realized that with a jacket, once you remove a lapel, it no longer felt like a jacket. Like that felt like an essential element in a jacket. With a pant, you know, two legs. It sounds.
We had to find what's like that essential detail that really defines that garment as what it is, and keep that, and all the other elements we were able to kind of strip away.
So up in their Berkshire studio, surrounded by what I can only imagine were mountains of deconstructed thrift store finds, Jack and Lazaro sketch out what would become their fall-winter 2019 ready-to-wear collection. And its defining feature? It's what they started calling remnants, these incomplete fragments of other garments. Browsing through photos of the New York runway show where it premiered, I'm struck by how deeply embedded LeWitt's influence is within the collection. This is not some surface-level tribute. You can see Jack and Lazaro really engaging with the concept of reduction within their own medium. These looks are layered, yet they're sneakily minimalist. You might catch yourself filling in the blanks, seeing clothes and accessories that the models weren't really wearing, but are suggested. The references to Saul LeWitt, like so many of the influences that play into a Prenza Schooler collection, was specific to fall-winter 2019. But Lazaro and Jack say things went a little different this time.
You know, sometimes you unlock a concept and sometimes you're done with it after that season. You're like, oh, we've exhausted that. We've taken it to like its limit.
We'd explore this and then we'd explore that and just bouncing around all over the place. And it wasn't until this collection that we started really building some kind of key ideas and some key codes that now we really are still to this day carrying forward.
After the collection was done, we didn't feel like we were done exploring it, really. This idea of reducing and paring stuff down and taking things to its essential form.
Of course, part of that has to be the allure of minimalism to artistic sensibilities that have maybe grown tired of constantly adding. At a certain point, you begin to appreciate the challenge of doing more with less. But the more Jack and Lazaro engaged with Saul LeWitt, the more they saw this artist as not just an influence, but rather as a creative mind whose project resonated with their own. Lazaro really connected the dots for me.
We create a garment on a stand, and we create garments on a rack, and we work really hard on these objects. But at the end of the day, they're objects. They don't really exist in the real world until another person comes in and inhabits that. Like actually wears it and moves it and gives it its creases and attitude and gives it its slouch or its personality. Like in a way, it's like the instructions of Saul LeWitt. And then it requires that extra person, that extra party to actually give it its real life experience somehow. I mean, that was such an interesting parallel. Like no two lines are the same. No two people are going to draw while drawing the same. They're going to understand the instructions slightly different. The line quality is going to be different. Just like two people aren't going to wear the jacket the same. They're just going to give it a different attitude, a different style, different nuance. And that idea of like letting go and letting people kind of make it their own is kind of freeing.
Big thanks to our guests, Lazaro Hernandez and Jack McCullough of Prenza Schooler. Saul LeWitt, Variations on a Theme, is part of the Microsoft In Culture podcast. Follow us or subscribe wherever you're currently listening. This season is written by producer Jordan Rothline and me, Desan Lopez-Cosell. This episode was edited and mixed by Nat Wiener, and features original music by Angular Wave Research. Very special thanks to the estate of Saul LeWitt and to Lindsay Avier, whose research on Saul LeWitt has been integral to this project. This episode features a clip from Saul LeWitt, an interview. The interview was conducted by Kate Horsfield at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago and appears courtesy of the Video Data Bank. This podcast season is a companion to an app from the estate of Saul LeWitt. which was developed in close collaboration with Microsoft. It uses state-of-the-art technology like artificial intelligence to help immerse users in LeWitt's life, artworks, and process. Download it now, wherever you get your smartphone apps. Solo It, Variations on a Theme, is a production of Microsoft in collaboration with Listen, a sensory experience company in New York City.